Warning, this podcast contains bad words and stories about drugs and sex and overthrowing the government. Proceed with caution. Okay. Thank you. And now on to our show. Wake up, brother, we got nothing to do. Let's go outside, just me and you, and build a fort. We'll pack a lunch, won't be home till after dark. Then after dinner we can sneak back out. You know that high school girl I've been telling you about? Well, she gets undressed about a quarter to nine, and we can watch her do it from the big old pine next door. She got a room on the second floor. Well, looks like another fucked up day in paradise.
Alrighty, howdy. Thanks for coming by here and listening to my podcast. Back in episode 003, the ultra easy became way complicated when a swirling vortex yawned open and swallowed the whole project. Carmen, my female lead, couldn't legally work in the U.S. of A., so we moved the production to Canada. Then Maho found a big boat to shoot on in the province of Ontario, clearing the way to restoring the script's post-apocalyptic context, which opened a whole other can of worms. On my way to eyeball this can, less than a month before we're scheduled to start shooting, my alleged sex crimes prevent me from entering Canada.
Since this is episode 004, you might as well admit that you've been sucked into the lightning-streaked vortex too. And you're kind of liking the ride. This might be a good time to drag 10 of your most trusted allies into the gaping maw of the Daughter of Godcast, because the story only gets weirder and more paranoid from here on, and you might need some peer support to make it through alive. Just saying. You're going deeper, poised to slip past the outer edge of the inner circle. You're about to be initiated into one of the closely guarded secrets of this podcast. This is your last chance to turn back.
Episode 004, 5 to 10 in the Canadian Slammer.
I love Canada. I've partied with friends in swinging Toronto, attended the 1996 CHI conference in Vancouver, BC, and crossed the Peace Bridge countless times traveling between New York City and Michigan. As recently as January of 2006, I had driven up to Montreal with Laurence Schroeder and two other artists, Jong-Woon and Valère, for a long weekend of snowboarding. Negotiating with Sonia DeMombro of the Canadian Entertainment Division of the Foreign Worker Program to get work permits for the cast and crew was a piece of cake in contrast to the pointless application and denial by the U.S. Immigration for an H-2B visa. Fine, we'll just enhance the Canadian economy with our juicy production budget. Anne Blake at the Marine Museum of the Great Lakes in Kingston, Ontario, offered us 10 days aboard the Alexander Henry with support staff for $5,000 U.S. The ship wouldn't be ready for guests until May, so we booked another B&B close by and a fantastic vegetarian restaurant in downtown Kingston, the Sleepless Goat, for supreme craft services. Oh my God, their food was so good. Canada is awesome. Canada rocks. On March 22nd, I drove 6 hours through the boondocks of upstate New York, anticipating a tour of the Alexander Henry and a heavy session of production planning. I rolled up on the Canadian border at Lansdowne and, wearing a broad, confident smile, handed my passport to the agent in the booth. "What are your plans in Canada?" I proudly declared, "I'm scouting a film location." He gave his screens an extended stare and said, "Pull over." Oops. I pulled over and parked, and another customs agent started to inspect my van. We chatted amiably. Did I mention I love Canada? He found my SLR camera, extra merino wool long johns, organic celery, and, "Sir, step back from the vehicle. What is this?" The agent was brandishing a copy of the Concealed Handgun Manual, How to Choose, Carry, and Shoot a Gun in Self-Defense by Chris Bird, the National Phenomena 2nd Edition. I had bought it on a whim years ago and forgotten it in one of the random compartments in the back of the van. "Sir, are you transporting any weapons in this vehicle?" I thought fast. "No, look, I'm a filmmaker. It's for research. I buy lots of books for research. People have guns in movies. I don't own any guns. The most shooting I've ever done was plinking soup cans with my friend's father's .22. I may not have said all that. I was just trying to sound sincere, which was tricky because, well, I was sincere. "Well, what was I supposed to think when I found this?" He sounded kind of apologetic. I love Canada. Inspection over. I entered the border control office and handed my passport to yet another agent behind the counter. She was rather attractive. I couldn't help but notice as she brought up my information. I wondered if perhaps I might ask her out. "Were you ever convicted of a crime?" she asked.
No, I stuttered. "Speeding tickets?"
"The United States FBI shares information with Canada, and your record shows unresolved felony charges." I balked.
"Felony charges?"
She turned her screen around on the counter so I could see. There was the action with the Traverse 8. What the rabid prosecutor had patriotically felt were appropriate charges for laying down in front of Army Reserve tanker trucks. Criminal trespass and molesting workers. I told her they were from a protest in opposition to the Iraq War, and that all the charges were essentially dropped. She helpfully explained. "There are three boxes here. The initial charges, what you've been tried for, and the judgment. The first box has your felony charges. The other two boxes are blank, so your record appears as if you haven't gone to trial. There has been no resolution. Molesting workers in Canada means sexually molesting workers. You can get 5 to 10 years in prison for that here." Her eyes were not flirty, not even friendly. As far as she knew, I could have broken into an office building, had my way with an elevator full of secretaries at gunpoint, been arrested, jumped bail, and was now fleeing the country. As a representative of law and order, she likely wasn't into bad boys. Forgetting completely about the big boat, I watched my scheme of getting with her take a torpedo amidships. I was feeling not a little annoyed. Look, this was a war protest. The prosecutor reduced the charges to blocking traffic, not even a misdemeanor. I'm planning to shoot a movie in Canada in April. I've gotten work permits from the Canadian Labor Board. What can I do?
Go back to the jurisdiction where you were arrested and obtain a notarized copy of your complete records. Then come back to this border location and we'll fix your records here in Canada. We can't do anything about your FBI records in the USA, but you'll be able to enter our country.
She was kind of sweet on me after all. Or maybe just Canadian. I smiled and thanked her. I jumped back in my van, turned around, got a brusque wave through by the trollish U.S. border agent as I re-entered America, and then settled into the six-hour drive back to Brooklyn. I got on the phone to the Traverse City Government Center and asked about my records. A typically friendly Michigan lady looked me up.
"Well, they look good here. Everything is complete. Why would my FBI records be incomplete?"
"I don't know. We transmit everything to the FBI once the case is closed. Couldn't have happened on our end. That's just not how things work here."
Curiouser and curiouser.
I requested a duplicate for immediate pickup. Melanie Steffes, my painter friend living in Honor, Michigan, was scheduled to join the dog crew as an assistant director. I got her on the cell, and she leapt into action. She drove to TC, grabbed the records, had them notarized, and dropped off at FedEx. With luck, we'd only be slightly behind schedule. On March 27th, I drove back to Lansdowne and once again met with my attractive border officer. She seemed preoccupied. My triumphant return to Canada and exoneration didn't make much of an impression. Maybe she liked bad boys after all, like in Raising Arizona. She fixed the Canadian version of my FBI file, advised me to keep the notarized records with my passport just in case, and allowed me to enter her country. I didn't ask her out. The Alexander Henry was truly awesome. Complexity be damned. This was the location. Besides, time had run out. Production scheduled to start on April 10th, now just 2 weeks away.
Did I say thank you? Well, let me say it right now if I haven't. Thank you so much for checking this out, for listening to my Daughter of Godcast podcast with Dan Kelly, writer, director, telling you the stories of the making of the Daughter of God. 11 years in the making.
Go ahead and open up a new browser window. Log in to your favorite social media and slip dog.movie. That's D-O-G. Dot MOVIE into your feed.
Help all the glorious weirdos, genius oddballs, and delicious misfits to hook in, power on, and shine to rival the sun. We are Legion. Your initiation is almost complete. Now you get to find out one of the most closely guarded secrets of the Daughter of God Cast podcast. The audience for the Daughter of God is you and everyone else like you. I'm special. I don't know any other people like me, you might be thinking. Yet. That's the beauty of this podcast. All over the earth, strange attractors similar to Daughter of Godcast are popping up. Visualize web-enabled mycelial mats or thorny black locust saplings growing into radio telescopes. They're popping up and transmitting, calling every dreamer, closet optimist, volunteer outcast, and unwitting superhero just like you and me. This podcast has mysteriously brought us together, and more friends are on the way, raring to collaborate on pegging the fun meter. You can be a beacon to guide the tribe in.